Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. I'm back in action today. What a week. What a weekend, too. There's so much. Literally, there's so much going on. I don't remember anything quite like it. All different stories. I mean, you got global, you got domestic. This hour, we're going to be joined by Lawrence Jones. If you're watching the stream, Lawrence is here already. And then bottom of the hour is Zvika Klein. He's going to join us from Jerusalem. He is editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. You want to get a perspective on what's going on? What better place to go? So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Yep. President of the United States, over the weekend, the Parade for the Ages, a perfectly timed and executed Army celebration in D.C. Did you watch? What did you think? As contrast with another series of demonstrations in the streets.
I went all over the city in search of these Marines. And I'm sorry, but I just didn't see them. I do want to dispel the notion that the military is here. We don't want them here. They don't need to be here.
Well, we already know for a fact they needed to be there because 2 weeks ago, it was your police chief, Mayor Bass, that said they needed help and they were overwhelmed. Illegal immigration crackdown continues with new focus. Democratic cities, not hospitality, and not in on the rural or the farms, as the president praises ICE and promises to bolster their ranks, as Dems say their No King's Day was a resounding success. What do you think about that?
We were facing an imminent existential threat, the threat of Iran rushing to weaponize their enriched uranium to make atomic bombs with a specific and declared intent to destroy us. So we had to act.
Prime Minister Netanyahu talking about what went into Israel's decision to strike at Iran, why Israel has to finish the job, and why I worry they're not going to be able to, although they're off to a heck of a start. Lawrence Jones joins us in studio. Lawrence, I got to start with what you did, co-hosting the parade with Emily Campagno. You did a great job. Well, I really got a perspective of our fighting force through the ages, 250 years. What was it like on the scene?
Brian, as a history guy, you know a lot of the history.
Yep.
But our kids just aren't being talking. The American public just don't. They don't teach this stuff in school. It was such a great moment. Obviously, I'm a little partial because a lot of my family served in the Army. My dad, grandfather, grandmother, uncles. I mean, it's just my lineage is from there. But the American people, they were so excited about it because it was a celebration, not just of the Army, but of the country as well. And then you had these lunatics on the other side with other flags. I just think it made them the out of touch party.
I think it went a lot to selling the story, too.
Yeah.
Right? Because so if you're 12 years old, you're walking through the city, and then what the Army did, it set up their little mini boot camp.
That's right.
You're climbing ropes and going through Constantino wire and doing things. And people are like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then to see them saluted and cheered also reaffirms it's a cool thing.
The paratroopers jumping out of the sky, landing right there, and then presenting the flag to the commander-in-chief. And then typically when you see our servicemen in uniform, they have their serious face. When they were in those tanks and they had the dogs out there and the robots out there, they were waving to the crowd, smiling. You just saw a different side. And all the talk was this was just going to be a celebration because it's the president's birthday. There were maybe two mentions of that throughout the entire thing, and they were very organic. Everything else was Army in America.
Yeah, so people say, well, it was costly. Yeah, it was cost between 25 and 40 million. But did you forget about the 22 foundations and companies that sponsored the Army's 250th birthday? Big, huge companies, a lot of defense firms. I wouldn't be surprised if you take the tourists that came through and people that came in, the hotels, that it broke even. But you should be able to salute your own military. I also thought it was interesting to get a perspective. If you go back in our history and say, you know, what did we do with parades in the past? George Washington had a parade, reviews troops originally when he became president. Thomas Jefferson hosted parades, reviews and parades, especially to the militia, not large scale, but they were substantial. Abraham Lincoln had parades, Truman had parades, JFK had parades in 1962. Why are they saying this is autocratic?
Brian, I don't care how much it costs.
I
don't care what they thought about the parade. Take it out of the recruitment budget because the numbers are already up. I guarantee you they're going to increase tenfold because it was something to be proud of. I mean, I lie to you not. I was watching the parade and watching the inspiration there, and I go, you know, I'm 32. Could I join? Could I do the reserves? It just made you want to be a part of something that's bigger than yourself.
Right. I want you to hear the critics. And there are a lot of them, most on the left. Seth Moulton, I guess he was in the Army of Marines, and Jason Crow. Cut 28.
And watching this from a president who has occasionally praised and oftentimes denigrated the U.S. military, I'm just reminded by how out of touch this guy is.
That the Army doesn't serve a politician, it serves the country. But President Trump obviously doesn't see it quite that way. He looks at the military as a function of his personal power.
The Army didn't ask for this. This is not how they wanted to celebrate this event. Donald Trump asked for this.
That's not true. He did it. The Army did ask for it and asked Joe Biden. And Joe Biden said, yeah, but make it small.
It was approved already in the past administration. I'm so glad that you brought that up, Brian, because that's the real story. Trump just made it bigger as he does all things. But also, I just find it comical. The party that continues to lose with the American people telling the president of the United States, who just won, who, when you look at the polling, is dominating on many of the top issues, that he is out of touch, that we are out of touch. Meanwhile, they march through the streets, their people, with Hamas flags, other countries' flags, and they burn the American flag, and they call us out of touch.
So okay. Thursday night, we find out that the bombing started to get rid of the nuclear program in Iran. But what they were able to do, I don't. If you put that into an episode of Homeland or into a Tom Cruise movie, I'd say, well, it's not realistic, but I'll just sit back and have fun.
Right.
The Mossad set up their own drone factory in Iran. They assassinate and lure these military leaders into one room kill them all. They kill 10 nuclear scientists, some of them in their beds, and then they start the bombing, and they realize that they could hit all four nuclear facilities.
And that doesn't even include all the human intelligence where they're essentially tracking all the leaders. They're there. Their guys are there on their ground. That's why they know exactly what they're doing. And I think for all the people that are criticizing this president, they tried to assassinate the president, first of all. There's been two attempts of that from the Iranians as well that we have intel of, as well as the proxies. Benjamin, the Americans have confirmed that, and Netanyahu did that in Brett Baer's interview yesterday. But our interests are there as well. They call us Big Satan. They call Israel Little Satan. And I just think the president gets it, and he's offered them a way to negotiate. All the negotiators that were negotiating originally, they're now dead. So who wants to come up, step up to the table, and offer peace as well? The president wants peace. But if you don't want it, then you're going to go.
So the easy part of the Abraham Accords was signing the documents.
That's right.
As soon as he got close, and you could say that Brett Baer had a part in that.
Right.
He interviews MBS in Saudi Arabia. Netanyahu watches the interview and says, I'll do a deal with MBS. Let's do an interview, Brett. And he does it. And they're about to sign it, and October 7th happens, and they pull off the massacre of massacres. Mm-hmm. And it was so horrific. Within a week, Israel was doing something they didn't want to do, go into the Gaza Strip. And next thing you know, they're doing something they didn't want to do. They go into Lebanon, and they, through the pager and through some brilliant activities, they have killed all the leadership, almost all the leadership of Hamas. They're now in their third person. It's not a sin war now. And then in Hezbollah, they're flat on their back. Syria flips. And Syria is no longer an enemy of Israel, leaving Iran.
Brian, I don't want to bore the audience, but to put it in a short way, Iran, although you got your Sunnis and Shias, Iran's objective has been to unite the Muslim world, the Islamic culture, to get it all together. And so when they saw peace happening, they go, we got to stop this. That's when you got October 7th. Now you got Gaza, what's happening there, and the children. Now, the leaders understand that Iran is a threat. They won't publicly say that because they don't want their people to be upset. But behind the scenes, they're telling the president as well as the intelligence community, we don't want Iran there as well. We don't like the leaders there and all that. But they can't say that publicly because they may lose their people in the process. So I think what you're going to see is, yes, they're going to be saying, hey, let's tone down the rhetoric. Let's not have the supreme leader assassinated. But if you want peace, you got to get rid of Iran.
So the prime minister was asked by Brett, is it true that you had the Grand Ayatollah in your crosshairs, and the President Trump called it off, cut for?
Actually, there's so many false reports of conversations that never happened, and I'm not going to get into that. But I can tell you, I think that we do what we need to do. We'll do what we need to do. And I think the United States knows what is good for the United States, and I'm just not going to get it.
So I was struck by the fact that the prime minister is popular in Iran. Why? Because he's taking on the Grand Ayatollah, Khomeini, and they hate their government. So I know we're in through a regime change, but if everyone dies or they leave, there's going to be a regime change. That's what happened with Assad.
I would say you're first right from the extent of that the Iranian people don't like their leadership right now. They don't like what's happening. They don't like the corruption that's happening there. They don't like being oppressed. But I do think it is a little complicated because unlike other world leaders, he's a cleric. He's a religious leader. So it would be like taking out their pope. And so it's looked upon, although they don't like him, he's still this religious leader there. And so he's their God right now. He is their person that is the ruler from a religious standpoint. Yeah. And so I think it complicates the matter just a little bit.
I hear you. And that's pretty much what the president said. Right. You know what? You don't want to make a martyr. Plus, he's 85.
Yeah.
And if you really want sick. If you really want to hurt him, you got to kill his son, too.
Right.
Because his son's in his 40s, yeah, right. And it's going to be next. He's going to change headdresses.
That's exactly right.
Right. That's about it. Listen, we'll take a time out. We'll talk a little bit more about other things that went on over the weekend, especially with the President of the United States. Now goes to the G7, where they're going to talk about this, yes, but they're also talking about possible trade deals, as well as what's going on in the Ukraine. A lot in the European Union want the president to be tougher with Putin, and there is an option that I think would be perfect for the president to take. We'll discuss when we come back with Lawrence Jones in just a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. If you want something fun and easy to search for homes and apartments, then you should be using the Redfin app. Whether I'm searching for my next place, if I want to buy, if I want to rent, or if I just want to scroll through and see some dream homes, like, for example, something on the beach or at least a walk to the beach, a big house, second, maybe a third floor, I use the Redfin app. Redfin makes it fun to search all the homes for sale and apartments for rent in your neighborhood. You can filter for price, for beds, for baths, square footage, and so much more. So if you find a place you love, Redfin makes it easy to go see it in person. Just schedule a tour right from the app. Plus, if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they close twice as many deals as other agents. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards your next home. So whether you're looking to buy, you're looking to rent, you're looking to sell, Redfin's got you covered. Download the Redfin app to get started.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I went all over the city in search of these Marines. And I'm sorry, but I just didn't see them. Hmm. What the troops are doing, the Federalized National Guard, is protecting the federal building. I think that detention that happened was an isolated incident, and I believe it was outside of the city of Los Angeles. But I do want to dispel the notion that the military is here. We don't want them here. They don't need to be here. Our local law enforcement have complete control of the situation.
So that is Mayor Bass saying the National Guard's making it worse and the Marines did detain somebody. That's what she's talking about. And that was the question to her. Lawrence Jones is still here. Lawrence, there were 2 million illegals living in California. Mm-hmm. At least 7 officers were hurt over the weekend with altercations revolving around the No Kings protests. But Chief McDonald said that even though the 7 officers suffered minor injuries while confronting violent protesters, they said they have things under control.
So a couple of things. If they aren't there, then talk to your governor, right? Because he's suing the president because they are there. So duke that out with him and figure out what the Democratic message is. Number two is the reason why they're doing the marches is because they don't want the ICE raids to happen. Now, the guys that were there in New York were serving criminal warrants of people who had not only final deportations orders signed by a judge, but they were also criminals as well. And they're saying they're going to continue to march until those stop. I'm sorry, that's just a non-starter.
So the president came out and put something on Truth Social over the weekend, and actually on Thursday, that said he's going to have a different approach. He said, I'm going to do less with hospitality, less in rural situations, because I'm pulling people out of jobs that are going to be filled by other illegals, whatever his reasoning is. And I think he's seen that some he's getting some negativity on something he was very strong on, and that is the deportations and the immigration. But how does that mix in with his what he put on this morning, saying he's going to start amping up intensity with ICE in Democratic-led cities?
This is what I can tell you based on my sources. And then I had the opportunity to see the president last Friday. The deportations will continue. Now, there won't be some amnesty measure, but there's going to be an announcement pretty soon from the president when it comes down to the people that are here that are contributing to society, merit-based immigration. Can they have a green card? I think there'll be an announcement very soon on that. He's going to be aggressive on people that broke the law. You won't be able to become a citizen in this country. But when you look at the polling, Brian, where you see the split is the criminals, and I mean violent criminals, versus the people that first act that is criminal of breaking the law coming across the border illegally. Now, we can't have a magnet, but there is some flexibility there because you have a president that has now secured the border. So you stop the flow now. Now we got to discuss the second part is what do we do with the people that are here? Now, Brian, we also don't have enough jail space. We also don't have enough cops to do this. They're going on raids now, and that's taking 30 cops versus a normal deportation order that would take two cops going. So we just don't have the manpower or the space.
So just about who's organizing the protests, there's a breakdown of, they say, 198 partners listed on the official publicity material for the financial and political machine called hashtag No Tings. 16 Democratic PACs, including Friends of Bernie Sanders, Progressive Democrats of America, and Vote Blue, with about $19.4 million in spending power. 18 Democrats aligned 501c3, including lead organizers, the American Federation of Teachers, United Auto Workers, Communication Work. Who are these people? These are political committees, 76 politically aligned political nonprofits. Really? Nonprofits have to protest in the streets. So there's going to be an investigation into these to find out who's really behind it, and are you violating your 501c3s, which is nonpartisan?
Not just that, Brian. You're paying people to go out there and protest. I mean, this is not organic at all. You got people all on TikTok and other social media platforms saying, hey, I was offered this amount of money to show up and just protest. This is crazy. This is why I don't put much stock into the protest. You're only going to anger the American public with all the flags and all this rhetoric going after our cops. We don't like it, but also it doesn't help you guys politically when it comes to building a movement because it's not organic. It's not real.
Yeah, Olivia Rodrigo is the celebrity that showed up for that. LAPD Chief McDonald now denying that she ever asked for any help. So I think it's going to be interesting to see because if, let's say, Chicago is out of control or Seattle or Portland, does the president do the same thing he did, just go over the head of the governor and put National Guard in there? I mean, I feel bad for the National Guard. They're going to be in the middle of it. But that's got to be the warning shot. I'm going to do the same thing I do with Gavin Newsom. That's why you got to make sure to win that case.
Well, you have to do it, Brian. I mean, I remember 2020, the American public, we weren't happy with our cities burning. Yeah. So at some extent, I think the president, you mentioned this earlier on Fox, learned from that situation and said, hey, I'm just going to step in.
The immigration situation, he's now, when it comes to deportation, at 42% approval. On the border, he's 52. So both should be higher. Do you think that bothers him?
I think it bothers him because there's a lot of misinformation that's out there. I think in large part, the deportation has focused on the criminals. But you get these one-off cases, and they become national news. But remember, we predicted this. I said after he got elected for the second time, watch the American public because they're going to change. When they start posting sob stories, it was going to change their sentiment of American people.
Yeah, but and we'll see. I mean, get the 660,000 criminals, that's a pretty good story to tell. Got to go. Lawrence, thanks so much.
Thanks,
you
got
to go. Speaking of, you got to go. Lawrence Jones. Hey, coming up next, we go out to Jerusalem and talk to the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete, not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Because we were facing an imminent threat, a dual existential threat. One, the threat of Iran rushing to weaponize their enriched uranium to make atomic bombs with a specific and declared intent to destroy us. Second, a rush to increase their ballistic missile arsenal into the capacity that they would have 3,600 weapons a year, new weapons, within 3 years, 10,000 ballistic missiles, each one weighing a ton, coming in at Mach 6, right into our cities, as you saw today. And then in 6 years, 20,000. That's no country can sustain that, and certainly not a country the size of Israel. So we had to act.
And they did act, and they have been acting. We're at day five now. Benjamin Netanyahu with Brett Baer last night. Joining us now is Zvika Klein, good friend of the show, editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. Zvika, thanks so much for joining us. How would you characterize the state of your country? I believe the number, you've suffered some casualties, and there's been you've been on constant attack, really, at night for the last right. 4 nights.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you for having me, Brian. There's more than 20 Israelis that were killed in the past few days since the IDF launched the attack on Iranian sites. And yeah, so every night it's been a very crazy, hectic night. Newer buildings or houses in Israel all have like some sort of a shelter that you could go in when there are sirens. But many Israelis just don't have that, and then they have to go to bomb shelters. And it's a very, it's a very like unpleasant situation. Many of them, having to share spaces. A lot of people are just tired and have too much tension because of the past few days, but also I think more than a year and a half of war causing many Israelis to just be, tired. That said, I think the attack, as we heard Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking, gave a lot of Israelis something to be proud of.
I don't see. It just seems to me that what the Mossad has done is going to be talked about for generations. I mean, forget about the pager is awesome. I mean, just to take the raw victories in Gaza with the takeout of the Sinwars and almost their entire leadership, and then responding to Iran, you wiped out their missile defense, and then initiating when Iran's on the doorstep of nuclear weapons to be able to take out their military command, 10 nuclear scientists. Now they hit the Quds force, knocked out at least four of them. So Iran has to be wondering who's next door. It seems like they've been totally infiltrated.
Yeah, I mean, so I think, you mentioned Gaza, and I think Gaza is really something that many Israelis are frustrated about, that our intelligence and our capacity in Gaza wasn't as much as it has been in Lebanon with Hezbollah and obviously with Iran. And you mentioned the Mossad. It's not only the Mossad, obviously, but, the Mossad being there for so many decades. One example is bringing in drones and UAVs for many years. Into Iran, yeah. So, like, the attack, many of the attacks actually happened from within, as well as the Israeli Air Force, who's been, since Friday, the Israeli Air Force has been going in and out without any issues. And, knock on wood, every single one of those pilots has returned safely, succeeding in their own mission. So it's very impressive. And I think the Mossad and the IDF have a few other tricks up their sleeve. It's not the end of the game.
But would you say this is a unifying moment for Israel? Did they see that This was a necessary military action that's been executed effectively. Is that how it's being viewed?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Brian, we spoke about this in the past, that how, you know, Israelis were very unified after October 7th, 2023, and then since have been slowly divided again. And then I think now you'll see on the heads of every single party, except for the Arab parties in the Knesset, are all supporting the government and the IDF, security forces, et cetera, in this operation. So that's not something we've seen for a very long time. There is unity. There is an understanding why this has to be. And this is, it is, at the end of the day, you know, all of our, you know, we've been suffering from missiles from the Houthis for such a long time, from Yemen. So, and Hezbollah and Hamas and Gaza. So all these organizations are funded or ideologically aligned with Iran.
So here's the president of the United States yesterday when asked about what our role is. Cut to.
Are you, as Prime Minister Netanyahu, on the same page considering how to deal with Iran?
Well, we get along very well, and I will tell you that I think you have great respect for each other.
What do they say? What is basically understood to be America's role in this?
You know, Brian, it's so complicated because every other, I feel like every few hours we hear a different statement from President Trump, and it's all, you know, it's all down the middle, like at times a bit, you know, oh, the war should end, or we are not involved, though we knew everything, a Reuters report. So it's, you know, it's not very, I mean, obviously the U.S., you know, was aware. Obviously, Israel and the U.S. share intelligence information when it comes to Iran as a common enemy. And the real question, and also the U.S. Helping Israel with trying to shoot down these drones and missiles that are shot at Israel. The question, the big question really is, will the U.S. participate in these attacks? I don't know. Maybe even you know better than I do. But it's very unclear. It seems like the president is walking a very fine line because he was really trying to promote some sort of a deal.
Right. But a couple of things. It does seem like one aircraft carrier has been let our, I guess the F-35's been shooting down drones heading in direction, possibly missiles too. So I think they have played a defensive role. The question is, will we play a role in blowing up Fordo, which is buried in a mountain, and everybody knows we have the bunker busters and we need the B-2 bombers. You guys don't have that, nor do you have the bunker busters. If you leave Fordo intact, you might as well not have done the operation. So there's going to be a big decision to be made. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, right. Obviously, yes. So the IDF, you know, and I've speaking to many sources within the IDF and the security establishment, and it's been very clear for a while now that Israel alone cannot defeat Iran, and definitely not with you know, actually, as you said, you know, blow up its all of its nuclear facilities. And really the only country that could help and actually make that happen is the United States. That said, you know, and we don't know enough because it's a very, you know, dictatorship or regime. We don't exactly know what's going on in Iran, but from the reports, videos, you know, small, you know, tidbits of information, we are seeing that the Iranian people are starting to say, you know, enough is enough. And some of them were actually saying that after Hezbollah was eliminated by the IDF, as you mentioned, the pager attack, and so many other operations. So and they were funded solely by the Iranians, and the Iranians are like, we have a economic crisis. Why are we funding these terrorists in Lebanon in order to fight a country that, like, we don't even necessarily hate?
Yes, the people. So the perception is that Netanyahu is kind of popular there because he's taken on the government that the Iranian people don't seem to like. How true is it that Netanyahu wanted to take out the Grand Ayatollah and the president and the supreme leader, and the President Trump held him back? Do you think, have you found validity to that story?
I don't have enough concrete evidence to any single direction. And I don't know. I don't want to put words in anybody else's mouth. But I will say that we've seen definitely in the Biden administration, but even now, there are, you know, many times there are people that advise.
Did we just lose him? But while we try to get him back, I want you to hear what Dave Ignatius said on talking about the key questions for the Iranians, because it's probably what Zvika Klein, who's the editor-in-chief of Jerusalem Post, has just mentioned. Cut 22.
I think the key question is whether Iranians can be convinced that the reason they're so vulnerable today, their cities across the country are under attack, is because the leadership has been spending all its time focusing on other proxies outside the country. They've been working with Hezbollah. They've been sending weapons and people to Syria and Yemen and helping Gaza. They've done everything but defend the homeland. That's the argument, I think, that a successful challenge to the Iranian regime would make. You closed all, fiddled around with all the windows, but you left the door wide open. And here they are. And that right. Might be, over time, it would take some weeks, a winning argument.
Isn't that interesting? And that's what we heard before with the Iranians. So think about this. They're giving all this money to Hezbollah, all this money to Hamas, all this money to Islamic Jihad, all this money and equipment to the Houthi rebels. They're selling the Shahid drones over to Russia. Where's that money going to fund these proxies? What have they done? They've been flattened by the Israelis. Why? Because the Israelis had no choice. After the October 7th attacks, October 8th, Hezbollah was fighting them, rocking them. And then you have Hamas. Obviously, if you're going to perpetrate that crime, you're going to pay a price. Zvika, the one thing I played was Dave Ignatius of the Washington Post came out and said the Iranian people are questioning where's the money to defend ourselves, like you were mentioning. He said the money went to Hezbollah, the money went to Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the Houthi rebels. Where's our money? Where's our defense? And that could foment some of the unrest and a happiness they have with their government already, which has never been so weak. Do you see this as a window of opportunity that maybe the Iranians are going to rise up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something, you know, no Israeli official will say that this is part of the the agenda of the operation, but I think it's definitely one of the things. And, you know, it's complicated because nobody really wants to admit that they're interfering in other countries' politics, etc. But this is a regime that night and day says that the state of Israel does not have any right to exist, and that they're going to wipe it off the face of the earth, and also actually acting to do so. So, I mean, I think there's really a chance for some sort of a change. And also you hear from, you know, not on the record, unfortunately, but off record, for many leaders in the Arab world saying, we can't speak up out loud, but we support Israel, and we're, you know, Israel is doing our dirty work.
There's no question. And lastly, the overall attitude, the Iron Dome, David Sling, the Arrow system, THAAD missile system, still they say 15% of the rockets are getting through. Does that give you, I think it's overall the statistics are strong, but does it give you the people of Israel a sense of vulnerability they didn't think they had?
Yeah, I mean, the first round of attacks just, you know, a few days ago, pretty much the IDF was able to shoot them all down, all the missiles, and everyone was like, whoa, okay, like we're good. And I think it's important for people to remember that there's, you know, as much as technology or you know, defense tech would be developed, at the end of the day, we still are vulnerable. And we're paying, you know, casualties, and you see different sites that have been, you know, buildings that have been, mm-hmm. Broken apart. So yeah, there is some sort of vulnerability, but I think, as you know, we said at the beginning of the conversation, most Israelis are really proud and really understand why this has to happen. But just when it comes after such a long war, people are just a bit tired, but I think, you know, our fighters are out there and they're determined, and the pilots are going back and forth every day. It's very impressive.
I agree. Stay safe, Civica. And right now, what time is it there?
Now it is 10 minutes to 5 p.m. And I assume in a few hours, again, we'll have to start going back into our shelters.
I can imagine. That's what it's going to be. Hopefully it gets less and less each night as they zero in on more and more launchers. They say a third of the launchers have been destroyed. Who knows what's next? Civica Klein, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. He's editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. All right, there you go. A lot going on, from the parades to the immigration crackdown to the No Kings Day to what's happening in the Middle East. Where do you stand? There's this divide in the Republican Party, I'll tell you that. And I'll go over that when we come back. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Power, politics, and the people behind the headlines. I'm Miranda Devine, New York Post columnist and the host of the brand new podcast, Podforce One. Every week, I'll sit down for candid conversations with Washington's most powerful disruptors, lawmakers, newsmakers, and even the President of the United States.
Hello, everyone. This is your favorite president of all time, Donald Trump, and listen to Miranda Devine on her brand new podcast. It's going to be through the roof.
These are the leaders shaping the future of America and the world. Listen to Podforce One with me, Miranda Devine, every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. You don't want to miss an episode.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Doing my job as a senator to get information is part of our oversight and accountability responsibility. Mm-hmm. So to be able to ask a question of the secretary directly when they offered the meeting after the incident, I took it. But sadly, nothing substantive, nothing informative.
So this guy, Senator Alex Padilla, a guy you've never heard of, was appointed to the position when Kamala Harris, I believe that's when Harris went, became vice president. She was senator, and then they won. So he goes in, starts barging in, yelling at Kristi Noem, demanding a question, resisted people when they try to push him back, acted like a total clown. Now he says he was a victim, and now he feels terrible for other illegals and how they must have been treated. Listen to more from this guy from California, Cut 27.
If that's how this administration responds to a senator with a question, mm-hmm. Don't just imagine what they're capable of, but what they are doing when the cameras are not there to people without a title like United States Senator, that cruel, disrespectful treatment of so many people who deserve much better.
By the way, he was supposed to be first base at the congressional baseball game. Why he had to fly home to go ahead and confront the Homeland Security Secretary with a meeting that he could have gotten at any moment, and nobody knew who he was. Most people, he says most of the room knew who he was. Well, I never knew who he was. I know the name, but he doesn't do anything. Doesn't do any press, left wing, right wing, in between wing. Wasn't wearing his pin. Why are you screaming? I'm thinking right away, it's got to be a problem. If I'm there, I'm Secret Service, I don't know who he is. Not Lindsey Graham. You know, it's not Blumenthal. Everybody knows these guys. Familiar faces over the years. Not John Thune. Who are you? What are you screaming about? Why would you act like, what senator acts like that? So why would anyone think that you were a sitting senator? Absolutely crazy. But that was smothered over because of the war that happened and everything that took place over the weekend. I just thought the parade was really one of the strong points of the weekend. Everyone's worried about what's going on with the war. And I thought Max Boot, one of the big Republican conservative, but he just hates Trump. Everything Trump does is terrible. He said in an editorial, "My worry was that Trump would turn the parade into just another political pageant. Those concerns only grew when I saw how many of the spectators wore MAGA hats. But my apprehension began to melt away as soon as the music started to play and the soldiers began to march. Dear reader, I'm not going soft on Trump. As a military history nerd, I love to see these soldiers marching by in period uniforms from the American Revolution to Civil War to the World Wars."
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, where there was a huge protest over the weekend, but very few arrests. It seems somewhat orderly. Maybe had to do with the horrific events in Minnesota with the assassination of two political leaders, and people were on their game because they know that law enforcement was not going to tolerate anything. Michael Goodwin is standing by with the New York Post. Eli Lake, a columnist for the Free Press, contributing editor of commentary, is going to give perspective on what's happening with the war. But this just in, a battered Iran signals it wants to de-escalate hostilities with Israel, which brings me to the big three.
Number three.
As we celebrate tonight, we also think of the hundreds of thousands of Army soldiers who have made the supreme sacrifice for our nation.
That is the President of the United States, a brief excerpt from his speech, which was fantastic, about 15 minutes in length. It was all part of a parade. For me, it was fantastic. One for the ages, not too much, not too little. And people seem to really appreciate it. I think it's a great recruiting tool as well. What do you think?
Number two.
I went all over the city in search of these Marines. And I'm sorry, but I just didn't see them. I do want to dispel the notion that the military is here. We don't want them here. They don't need to be here.
Illegal immigration crackdown continues with a new focus. Democratic cities, not hospitality, hotels and things like that, or farms. Will this work? And will that end up bringing the National Guard just like they did in California?
Number one.
We were facing an imminent existential threat, the threat of Iran rushing to weaponize their enriched uranium to make atomic bombs with a specific and declared intent to destroy us. So we had to act.
I agree. And they did. Israel and Iran at war. Why Israel has to finish the job and why we should help them blow up every nuke plant in Iran, because they never can be trusted to stop it on their own. Now they're desperate. Why? They just lost four CUDS members, including their head of intelligence and his deputy, in the same hit. They've killed 10 leading, at least, nuclear scientists. 9 of their top military commanders. They've taken out their entire missile force, hit all 4 nuclear sites, but have not destroyed at least 2 of them, Natanz and Fordo. With us right now is Michael Goodwin, New York Post. Michael, first off, do you think that Israel should stop now?
Good morning, Brian. No. I think as long as this regime is in place, nothing's going to change. I mean, it's messianic in its desire to eliminate Israel and the United States and to foment revolution wherever it can. And that's what it's done. Look how it essentially took over Lebanon. I mean, the whole Palestinian Hamas, the mess it made in Syria,
Yeah. It
will do that wherever it can. And that's why I think now that Israel has begun this, now that it's had such amazing success at decapitating so much of the human infrastructure for both the terrorist forces, the government itself, the scientists working on the nuclear facilities, there's no way to stop this. I think if you stopped it now, it would be way incomplete, and it would give the regime some new energy in the sense that it would probably get money somehow from Russia or China, and who knows what kind of scientific help it would get from one of those people who wish us ill. So I think what this means in terms of how does Israel finish this, I don't know. I mean, it's impossible to predict which way this is going to go. But the idea of stopping now and leaving this regime in place, I think, is impractical and just asking for more trouble of the same kind.
So here's the statement. Iran is urgently signaling that it seeks to end hostilities and resumption of talks over its nuclear program, as long as the U.S. doesn't take part in the strikes, that according to Middle Eastern and Eastern European and European intermediaries, and Macron of France is pushing for them to return to talks. What is there to talk about? Now we're going to let you enrich. They made it easy. They said we're not going to stop spinning centrifuges and we're not going to stop enriching. So there was not even a discussion. Why would I let you get 1,000 nukes at 67% enrichment capacity when you know, they were supposed to be at 3.4% with the deal that was in place, but it would have expired by now.
This has to be effectively a surrender. And to call it anything else, you know, that's fine to help them save face. But if there's any capacity left for their malign intentions, including with the nuclear facilities, then it would be a mistake to stop now. So if they really want to talk, if they really want to give up the nuclear stuff and destroy it, as President Trump said, that was the goal. Oh, that's one thing, but we've seen no sign of that, and you'll get the UN, human rights, the poor suffering civilians. They are suffering civilians because of that government, and if you protect that government, if you allow it to go on as it was, you'll have more suffering. So I don't see how there's a credible way to let this regime stay in place and be confident that you won't be doing the same thing in 2 years or four years or 6 years.
Here's the prime minister, cut six.
Well, first of all, it's hogwash. While they were negotiating, the Ayatollah himself, Khamenei, tweeted again and again, death to Israel. Israel must be destroyed. So some good faith there, right? Aside from that, they had bad faith because they were cheating, and we saw it in our intel. It was very clear. And the U.S. had that same intel. Believe me, we shared it. We share that intelligence. One of the great things of our unprecedented cooperation that has happened under President Trump is that we share every bit of information. So number one, he's lying. That's not new. Iran lies all the time. They cheat.
Right. And by the way, he's indicating, too, that they were not getting all the intelligence shared with them from Anthony Blinken and whoever was in the White House. With the other guys, Sullivan. So this is what I worry about. When things calm down, there's going to be pressure on Israel to slow up and to not go after him again. And now the IAEA, they were told they're withdrawing from the IAEA, who came out and said, we're going to sanction him first time in 20 years. So the Iranians know the U.S. is supporting Israel in defense, and they're sure the U.S. is supporting Israel logistically, but they cannot guarantee the U.S. won't join the attacks. I think we have to join the attacks in the Fordo situation. How do you feel about the Republican Party divided on this? You have people on the MAGA right, maybe even Don Jr. and others, who don't want the president, didn't want to see us take any role in this.
Look, I understand that position because of events like Iraq, where we got drawn in and couldn't get out at great loss. I mean, you look at Vietnam, of course, which still hangs over, I think, many Americans' views of the military and of this involvement in foreign conflicts. There's no talk by anyone that I'm aware of sending American troops into battle. I think that's the great dividing line. And I think if there is a credible way, in other words, because we apparently are the only ones with the bunker buster bombs that can get through these mountainous terrains and into these nuclear facilities that are buried and fortified, that's a way for the United States to play a military role without putting troops in harm's way. So there's no perfectly clean way of doing this. This is important. This is an enemy of the United States. This is not just an enemy of Israel.
But I understand that. Number one is part of the reason why Iraq was so difficult was Iran, because they were in there funding militias, pardon the EFPs, killing our guys directly and indirectly. They're making sure all hell broke loose in there.
Designed the IEDs.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were called EFPs because they were the IEDs on steroids. So now people are like, well, here we go again. An ardent Trump ally fumed at Israel's preemptive strike, dubbing the U.S. complicit in this act of war and arguing that politicians purporting to be America first can't now credibly turn around and say, we had nothing to do with it. We're not saying we had nothing to do with it. Then you have people that are in the administration, like maybe Tulsi Gabbard, who I like, but I'm not sure that she's playing a role. Elbridge Colby denied General Korea's request for more defensive munitions to use on aircraft carriers. Now he's the undersecretary of defense, and Trump could trump him. But why is he denying our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the middle of a war effort?
Yeah, and I frankly, Brian, don't accept that this would be against America First.
Of course.
This is very much about America First. Iran wants to destroy America. It wants to destroy our allies. How is this inconsistent with protecting the homeland, with protecting American citizens everywhere? I mean, we are far removed from that battle, but we are not immune. I mean, Iran has tried to kill the president of the United States. It's tried to kill other leaders of our government, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, just for their actions in government towards Iran. So this idea that somehow the president would be violating the America First principles and betraying his voters, I don't accept it. I don't think President Trump accepts it either.
Yeah, we'll see. Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. I hope the president says, I will speak for MAGA, and there's nothing that's he came out and said, for those people who want peace, we can have peace if Iran has a nuclear weapon. For all those wonderful people who don't want to do anything about Iran having a nuclear weapon, that's not peace. That was a president's statement, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Thanks so much, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
All right. Listen, 1-866-408-7669. I'm going to squeeze in some calls, but at the bottom of the hour, Eli Lake's going to put additional spotlight on this. And what do you think? Were you part of the No Kings protests over the weekend? 50,000 in New York City. They were in Portland. They were in Philadelphia. They were in Los Angeles. They were in Austin, Texas. They unfurled a Mexican flag at a MLS game in Austin with Austin FC. How do you feel about that? 1-866-408-7669.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This was a very unique march where you had people coming from different parts of the city. 50,000, 14 arrests, no injuries to any member of service or to the protesters. And what's important, we use technology, drones, that allowed us to monitor the entire crowd and intel. We knew that there were outside agitators that wanted to disrupt. They were someone wearing masks and covering, and we zeroed in on them. We were very proactive in this entire
initiative.
How
do you even prepare for something that large? And tell us about the people that were arrested. Were they violent?
No, they committed disorderly conduct type crimes. Several of them received summonses. Others received desk appearance tickets. And one actually went through the system. So what we did differently is that, number one, the drones were amazing because it allowed us to police this not only from the ground but in the air. If you see a crowd of people with gas masks on, face mask on, now we had our folks watching them.
That is Eric Adams, who's the mayor, who's running as independent now, not taking part in the primary. And he is going to run as independent, and he's trying to get money to match the $4 million he raised. See if he's shot against Cuomo, who's got a ton of money, as well as this guy Mamdani, who's a radical socialist. Sadly, New York City has not learned anything. They put him in contention. Joe, you're listening in Portland, Maine. Hey, Joe.
Morning, Brian.
Hey, what are things like in Portland? Did you experience some of the unrest? Did you witness it?
No, we had one guy got arrested, I think. I think he might have thrown a water bottle or something at a police officer. But we had quite a few people turn out. I mean, there's a lot of people up here that just don't like the fact that Trump spent whatever. Nobody's even saying how much it was, $20 million, $50 million, $90 million for a birthday party. I understand that they were, you know, celebrating the military, but that money should have went right to the VA or to school lunches. It would have been better spent. I could have had a better party for $500.
Yeah, I don't think you watched it. If you watched it, you wouldn't have said that because you have the tanks, the period pieces, the celebration of the military. Even in recruiting, they probably made it back. If you look at the underwrite sponsors, thing probably broke even, along with the fact it became like a patriotic event, which is not bad. I mean, in Portland, they don't like patriotic events. I understand that. Maybe you're one of them. So multiple police officers were injured in Portland on Saturday after a violent riot at an immigration ICE facility. A mob launched fireworks, smoke grenades, and threw rocks at federal law enforcement. But this guy didn't see anything. Joe, you didn't see anything. They broke glass, forcibly entered the ICE building. Homeland Security Secretary Tricia McLaughlin, the spokesperson, told this to Fox Digital. Four officers were hurt, but Joe didn't see anything. Though federal law enforcement were able to secure the facility. The police, the Portland Police Bureau declared an unlawful assembly right near the facility at 6:30 at night. But Joe didn't say anything. Everything was fine. And it was not a birthday party for the president. You keep saying it over and over again. Nicholas, listening in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Nicholas.
Good morning, Brian. I love you, brother. I'm so grateful for you. Listen, all these clowns walking around with their foreign flags, hurling rocks. Okay, you hate America. Number one, if you're a visa holder, get them out of here. If you're not born here and you're a citizen, revoke their citizenship and their passports. Get them the hell out of here. And here's another one. I know it's far fetched. If you're born in this country and you hate our cops, our military, you hate our country, get these guys, round them up, exile them out of the country with no passport and no citizenship. Give them a sandwich and a kick in the ass out of here. We don't need these people here.
Are you sure you're not from New York? Or are you from? You're from Scranton, but you sound like you're a New Yorker.
I'm an old Brooklynite, brother.
There you go.
I live in Scranton, but I'm from Brooklyn, okay?
Right. So this guy's little parade, this he said was a little parade, 6,700 soldiers, 28 Abrams tanks, 28 Bradley fighter vehicles, 50 military aircraft. Thousands joined. Among the people that liked it, Senator Fetterman, the parade is comprised of our sons, daughters, mothers, and fathers. They're the best of us. Regardless of your policies, it's appropriate to celebrate 250 years of sacrifice, dedication, and service. It gets the country talking about our history again. How many 12-year-olds watch that and say, you know what? I want to do that. They're watching the Army men and women climb ropes, go through their obstacle course, give a sense of boot camp. And people go, I think that's pretty cool. It's nice to go up to people in camouflage and they're wearing camouflage in the airport. But if you really want to see people, go to a parade. And I think the president appreciates it. So I think that was very well. I thought it was well received for the people that took the time to watch it. People want to criticize it. Go ahead. It was also Flag Day. Sandra in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Oh, good morning, Brian. Good to speak to you. You know, I was thinking about people referring to Donald Trump as king. Well, in 1877, Ulysses Grant, a Republican president, he reminds me of Donald Trump in a lot of ways. He was called a dictator because he put an end to the Ku Klux Klan. People, doctors, lawyers, during the day they were doing these great jobs, but at night they were murderers killing innocent people. So, you know what? And Ulysses Grant, he didn't care what they said. And I think either does Donald Trump. He's doing something good with ICE. He needs them there to help us get rid of people that came here illegally and especially the murderers. So, you know what? Let them call him king. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you want to save money, find out why Chirla is getting money from the Chinese. That is the group that led the charge for the unrest in Los Angeles that they say is a few square blocks until you're there. So you're one of the 12 police officers that got hurt over the weekend. Let's find out about all these anti-ICE protesters. You just against ICE or are you being paid to be against ICE? Listen, when we come back, I'm going to get a perspective on what's happening in the war, but we'll, in a half hour, go back to calls. So stay right there.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
The Iranian dictator, really. He's a dictator. He's a tyrant. He has sent us a message calling just about every day for the death of Israel, the destruction of Israel and America. But the death of Israel. So my answer to him is with action, not with words.
So the prime minister speaking with Brett Baer yesterday on the ongoing fighting that's taking place. And I guess about 2 hours is going to get dark there and the bombing will start in Iran. And I'm sure there's going to be some ballistic missiles that are heading Israel's direction. Eli Lake is all over it. Columnist for the Free Press, has known as much about the Middle East as anyone you'll speak to. Contributing editor at Commentary. Eli, welcome.
Great to be here, Brian.
I mean, I'm
wearing
much
my Clash t-shirt because the Casbah has been rocked.
Yes, that's interesting. I didn't know there was a theme to it, but I like it. It's pretty amazing. I mean, we got the video of what's happening in Israel because we have great sources, we've got bureaus there.
But unbelievable, yeah.
We're getting a different perspective on Iran's taking most of the hits. They're the ones,
for sure.
The gas and the gas fields and the oil fields and the nuclear scientists and the command leadership. Four different nuclear sites have been hit. The whole, any type of missile defense has been destroyed. A third of their missile launchers have been rocked. What do you think's going on in Iran right now?
I think what we're seeing is a series of airstrikes combined with on-the-ground Mossad special operations that are designed to decapitate the security military side of the regime. So there was a decision, and the Israeli National Security Advisor said over the weekend that they were not attacking what he called political targets. That means Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, that means the president. But everything that keeps that dictatorship in power, meaning MOIS, IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard Corps, the traditional military, the Quds Force, all of these arms of the Iranian state that allow the dictatorship to survive because they're hated by their people, are being decapitated one by one. Israel has Iran wired for sound. This is, I think, one of the most extraordinary military operations that have really, I don't think, in modern history, like, it's hard to imagine. You'd have to go back to antiquity, I guess, to sort of think of something this effective and this extraordinarily efficient and targeted. I mean, the ballistic missiles are landing at random in Tel Aviv, killing civilians. Israel's target list is like, you know, various generals and people in charge of these military programs. It's amazing.
I mean, look, the head of the Quds Force, Mohammad Kazemi, the head of intel, dead. His deputy, Hassan Mohawk, I think you say his name, deputy, killed. Good luck with it. So good luck. Talk to your Ted Dent nuclear scientist, as well as nine commanders. Now, what do you
By the way, can I say, I heard from another Israeli journalist named Amit Sigal, who was on a podcast. He said that Israel had phone calls to the top air defense commanders and air force commanders before the operation, telling them to come to an emergency meeting. These are the people who would give the order to launch the retaliatory strikes, to meet in one location, which the Israelis knew, and blew all of them up. Think about that.
So came in to dupe them to a meeting.
Yeah, like emergency meeting, show up here. Like, you get the text. They show up, the Israelis had spoofed the text, and then they are all there, and then they blow that up. That was on the first night. That's like science fiction. It's James Bond. It's incredible.
So what do you think of this Wall Street Journal report? The headline is, a battered Iran signals it wants to de-escalate hostilities with Israel. They say they're urgently signaling that it seeks an end to the hostilities. And they say that the U.S. can broker any talks as long as they don't take part in the attacks. They've run defensive operations in the attacks. The F-35s and different things from the aircraft carriers, at least one aircraft carrier, has definitely helped out. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I had that detail in my file today. That went up last night. This is the Iranian foreign minister, Araghchi. What he's doing is he's going around the European foreign ministries and Gulf foreign ministries and conveying this message. The million-dollar question, is he speaking for himself or is he speaking for the supreme leader? And it's unclear whether this is the chief diplomat trying to do some diplomacy or whether he really is representing, a sort of the strategic decision of the regime. If that's the case, then they're basically going to have to trade their entire nuclear program for the survival of the regime. But I'm not entirely sure that that's a realistic option. And even if they did that, this is such a humiliation to Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. It's unclear to me whether he would last 6 months after such a deal, because he would have to worry about his own, the surviving hardliners. And then always keep in mind the Iranian people, they are furious. They loathe this regime. And will he have the ability to get his thugs to use violence against demonstrations? That's the big question. I'm not so sure that that's going to be the case, but we'll have to see.
Do they ever sit around and go, what the hell did we do October 7th? You had that day of glory and horrific killing. And then October 8th, Hezbollah joins the fray. And since that time, Hamas and Hezbollah almost have death blows. And now Iran has lost their so much in terms of their aura. Now the people of Iran are saying, where's all of the money? Why did we give money to Hezbollah and Hamas? We have no missile defense. We've got
Air
force.
The Iranian people know. They've been saying it for years. The only thing that's been keeping Khamenei in power has been the willingness to use like unthinkable brutality against his own population. That's the thing to watch. Will, if you're the 35-year-old Basiji force commander and you're ordered to fire live bullets on a demonstration, are you going to follow the order at this point, given everything you know, given that the three commanders in top ahead of you have been picked off by the Israelis? Are you going to do that if there are mass demonstrations?
Yeah, I mean, you might have a choice. And this is why the prime minister said this, cut eight.
But to the people of Iran, I say you're great people. You're people of great talent and genius. You have been usurped by this tyranny that has robbed you of hope, has robbed you of a good life. You know, I speak to the Iranian people directly. I don't know if you know this, Brett. I do these videos. I get millions and millions of responses. And they say, Viva Israel, Bravo Israel, free us from this tyranny. And I say to them, your hour of freedom is near. Rise up, be free.
What about that tactic?
I love it. I love it.
Turns out he's popular in Israel.
I wrote about this.
In Iran.
Yeah, I wrote about this like 8 years ago when he started doing this kind of thing. I noticed it. And, you know, I'm working on a piece, which I don't want to get into details because I'm still trying to report it out. But let's just say the Israelis have capabilities inside of Iran to support demonstrations and to support the opposition. The opposition in Iran is not organized. There isn't really a key leader. You could argue maybe the son of the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, is somebody who people have rallied around. He is more popular in Iran than I think most people would realize. But there is a real opportunity here. And I think the strategic opportunity is that, yes, I understand the argument. After, you know, the government falls in Afghanistan, the Taliban come in. You know, they're the devil we don't know, maybe worse than the devil we know. But this is a very bad devil, the Iranian regime. And the Iranians have a history of a constitutional system. They have a history of a democracy in some ways in the 20th century. It's not crazy to think that there can be something better. And I think that, you know, there is a role for America to play, not to rebuild, not to nation build. It's not for the United States at this point. We don't do that. But I think there is a role to play leading the world to try to bring support for something of a democratic transition.
Anyway, let's play this out.
Yeah.
So we know that they were transporting the Shahid drones to Russia. It really changed the face of the war after Russia realized they had a terrible ground game. That's got to stop. Oil and gas has just been destroyed or really crippled. That's going to hurt China, right? So Syria.
Well, okay, we should say there's a lot more oil and gas that they can destroy. I think that I'm not saying that it wasn't significant, but it's not like they've brought all the Iranian oil off market, which would really cause an
would
oil
you say
shock.
They've been disrupted. I guess $73.
They've been disruptions, but they could do more.
How about this? So Iran's got to go. China's got to say, wait a second. Okay, I got my money. I got some oil. Maybe I can't count on that. And then you have, of course, the transportation of the Houthi rebels are not getting rearmed by Russia or anybody else because Syria stopped that. You know, Syria says you're not allowed in. They're kicking Russia out of Syria wholeheartedly. So Russia, it loses an ally of Iran, you know, in Iran, let's say at least temporarily. Now, Russia maybe benefits a little bit from more oil and gas, but now they're trying to. Then you have Turkey and Russia, the only ones really calling for an end to the violence. I don't see many other states in the Gulf states doing much to demand an end to the violence. I don't see anybody rallying to Iran's side. Do you?
No. We're seeing kind of perfunctory remarks from the Arab foreign ministries, but I have no reason to believe their leaders actually believe it. I was surprised by a very strong supportive statement from Emmanuel Macron, who, you know, has been extremely critical of Israel's war in Gaza. Everybody knows Iran has been an utter menace to international security. This is an opportunity to finally take care of that problem. What I don't understand is the wing of the president, the MAGA coalition, that seems to think this is, I mean, it hasn't been World War III. And the idea that this is just like, you know, the worst thing in the world and that this is going to be their number one issue is, you know, it's kind of crazy to me that would be it.
I worry about guys like Elbridge Colby in the administration as undersecretary. He's evidently, he turned down a request from General Kirilla for to get more defensive weapons.
Yeah, that's not an ideological thing, though. That was also in my story today. That reflected the fact that there really is a low supply of these interceptors because we give them to Ukraine, we give them to Israel. We need those in our arsenal to deter bad guys ourselves, particularly in the Pacific. So that's just a reflection of something that Trump is trying to handle right now, which is to rebuild our defense industrial base because it's been devastated over neglect for the last 20, 25 years. And that's a huge priority for the Pentagon. So, you know, I have my differences with Elbridge Colby. He would be considered a restrainer. I'm not. And I, you know, but in fairness to him, I don't think that's him freelancing. I think that that is a reflection of the scarcity of the interceptors needed for these air defense systems.
So who are people that are against any type of measure? Us playing a role there and I'm mad at Israel.
It's Tucker Carlson from the outside. I'd say Tulsi Gabbard is somebody who has kind of made her views. She testified that there was that U.S. intelligence said that Iran wasn't trying to build a weapon. I think there's a lot of U.S. intelligence that would suggest they are. And certainly the Israelis don't have that. I think, you know, some people say that around J.D. Vance, J.D. Vance himself is a little bit more of an interesting figure here because he's been really, really supportive as a senator of Israel. He doesn't look at Israel the same way he looks at Ukraine, but certainly the people around Vance would be in that category. You know, and there were people who were recently fired below Mike Waltz, who was fired at the National Security Council. And that was sort of seen as a power move for this restrainer wing. And you can find other elements like that. On the other hand, Rubio, Hegseth, I mean, these are people who I think would be much more in the traditional Republican kind of position, which is that, you know, we're not seeking nation-building wars. We're not trying to, like, launch wars for fuzzy ideas of human rights. But America is a should be a force for good in the world, and it is. And I think that's how they look at it.
Yeah, I think so, too. I also think, you know, you worry about the Steve Bannon wing of the party, too. I don't know where you put
Bannon's
him on
an
that.
Interesting figure. I mean, his first response has been Israel's doing it. They should be on their own. Go with God. But Bannon also, you know, was very supportive of Trump getting out of the original Obama-Iran agreement. You know, I think that Bannon's very close with the evangelicals. The evangelicals are very supportive of Israel. I'm not sure I would put Bannon in the same category as Tucker Carlson. I do think that there is a kind of new constituency of kind of new Republicans who are represented maybe in the kind of podcasting world. And they may have been Democrats 15 years ago, but now they're not because of where the Democrats have gone. There's a lot of opposition to this war there. Mm. So we'll see how it plays out politically. But I would just point out, so far, Israel is like, looks like the Michael Jordan of 21st century war. They're going 6-0 in the finals. And like, I'm looking at this and I'm saying nothing succeeds like success. So
yeah, they
everybody
got,
who's.
Yeah. Anyone who thinks that Israel is vulnerable because of October 7th has not been studying what they've been doing since. Donald Trump in answer to the MAGA world, he says he wasn't familiar with Carlson's critique, but contended that as a pioneer of the modern America First movement, he's the final arbiter, which means to put the America U.S. first. We're considering that I'm the one that developed it, and considering that the term wasn't used until I came along, I think I'm the one that decides that. So he got a little angry at that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Donald Trump necessarily wants to alienate Tucker Carlson. He has a huge audience. He's certainly aligned with the Trump agenda on a number of things, but it's Tucker who decided to make this the sine qua non issue. So it's, you know, like we can agree on like 8 out of 10 things, Brian, right? But if the only thing I want to talk about is the one thing you and I don't agree on, and then the narrative that Tucker is retelling to his audience is that Trump is a chump. That Trump has been manipulated by warmongers and elites and the pro-Israel lobby and Netanyahu. And that is not who Trump is. Trump decides. And by the way, yeah. Trump does not sound like Netanyahu. He had a Truth Social over the weekend saying, I want this war to stop. Okay. You know, I mean, I think his vision of how it stops is a little different than like Tucker's. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's something insulting about the way that Tucker is framing the issue, as if Trump is not smart enough to know to make his own decisions,
which is crazy. Eli Lake, thanks so much. Check out his podcast, too, and his columns on the Free Press. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I fixed his mess. 15,000 people died in nursing homes, Cuomo. Closing psychiatric beds, and that's how we have many people on our streets right now, Cuomo. Putting in place the cannabis legislation where I had to close 1,400 illegal cannabis shops that he opened, Cuomo. Did a cash bail, revolving door criminal justice system, Cuomo. I can go down the list, and then he comes now and said, I made a mistake. I would have done it differently. That's not how this is done. Your era almost hurt this city.
That is Mayor Adams talking about Cuomo, who's likely going to win the nomination to be the Democratic nominee. But Eric Adams wants to hold the job by being independent. He came to our couch, which shows he's trying to do different things on Fox and Friends over the weekend because he was listening to the radio show. And I've said I've given him a shot. I think he's light years better than de Blasio. I see a lot of positive in what he's doing. I guess he appreciated that. He'll be on the radio show too soon. He said he absolutely wants to do it. So he came on this morning. He's don't count him out, and he's getting some money together. And remember, Bloomberg wants an independent, too, while holding office. Don't forget, I'm going to see everybody Saturday night, Dayton, Ohio, WHIO listeners, BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're there. I'm here from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. 50,000 people over the weekend in the No King's Day, which is a ridiculous march. But it was pretty much just a handful of arrests. It was violence-free. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Kanta Ahmed and Dr. Griff Jenkins. Both are esteemed members of some type of esteemed society.
Listen, if there's a doctor in front of my name, we're all completely screwed.
Well, Dr. Jill Biden is the only doctor I really subscribe to. She gives me all my prescriptions. Before we get to the latest breaking news from the Wall Street Journal that says that Iran might be coming to the table, let's outline the big three stories that matter the most.
Number three.
As we celebrate tonight, we also think of the hundreds of thousands of Army soldiers who have made the supreme sacrifice for our nation.
That is the President of the United States. His speech, concise, right to the point, nothing to do with politics. It was perfect. The parade, in my view, couldn't have been better. Some people did not like to watch it. Some people chose not to watch it. What do you think? We'll discuss.
Number two.
I went all over the city in search of these Marines. And I'm sorry, but I just didn't see them. I do want to dispel the notion that the military is here. We don't want them here. They don't need to be here.
Fantastic. Mayor Karen Bass, one of the worst in the country. Illegal immigration crackdown continues. There are 2 million illegals in Los Angeles, in California, and they need to be rounded up. The President of the United States changing taxes and increasing the heat in these Democratic-run cities. We'll explain.
Number one.
We were facing an imminent existential threat, the threat of Iran rushing to weaponize their enriched uranium to make atomic bombs with a specific and declared intent to destroy us. So we had to act.
And they did. Israel and Iran at war. Why Israel has to finish the job and why we should help them finish the job for the good of the planet. Despite the fact that many in the MAGA world are against it and say we shouldn't be playing a role in it, with us right now is Griff Jenkins doing a heck of a lot of coverage on this. And Griff, we know this. In about an hour, we expect another wave of attacks when night falls with the IDF basically has run of the skies. And they've knocked off about a third of the rocket launchers. And now the word from the Wall Street Journal is through intermediaries, it looks like Iran could be saying, let's talk.
Yeah, they want to ease up the pressure on them. You know, yesterday I got to interview Israel's ambassador to the UN, Danny Danon, on the Big Weekend Show. And one of the things I found fascinating, Brian, was that he said, you know, when we first started striking nuclear facilities, obviously the main goal was to stop them from getting a weapon. And, you know, they are days away. According to the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, in about 2 days' time, they could get a nuke warhead headed to Israel or anywhere else. But he told me, Danon, that, you know, the ballistic missiles that have been raining down, they're more than they thought they had. And the fact that we're seeing them getting through the Iron Dome, that is a surprise to them. Mm-hmm. And so they began to shift their strategy to really ramp up taking out the missile launchers. Now, you know, how many missiles do they have? How long can Iran do that? Maybe the fact that they now desperately want to get to the negotiating table is telling us that, you know, they're worried about their stockpile.
Ambassador Leiter, the Israeli ambassador to the United States, said this on that very topic, Cut 11.
The nuclear program and the ballistic missile program. The missiles that they're firing into Israel now are ballistic missiles with a tremendous payload. They create tremendous damage. And as a matter of fact, the supreme leader of Iran has said repeatedly that if he fires thousands of ballistic missiles into Israel, we're a small country and there's nothing we can do other than die. Well, we're not going to die. We're not going to allow these ballistic missiles to continue to hit Israel. And we're going to do what we have to do to defend our country.
And that's why they're going for the launchers. But, Griff, you know it. They're in the back of trucks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to catch up with these trucks. You could put them in a hiding place and then they just come out. You got to get them before they hit. I'm sure you could seek them once they release, but then you got to go find them.
Yeah. And, you know, you said something really important just a moment ago, Brian. You said, you know, maybe Israel's doing the world a favor. And that's exactly what Ambassador Danon felt, that, look, we are doing the world a favor. Someday the world will get on the same page and realize the favor that was done for them. And, you know, I asked yesterday with Ambassador Danon, I said, what do you hope to see out of the G7 now with these world leaders there? He said, moral clarity, so that the world can see with the missiles raining down on Israel and the threat of being so close to a nuclear warhead, that isn't just aimed at Israel. It's aimed at everybody in the world.
Griff, this is what is so frustrating, is that if Iran comes to the table or came to the table, if they played it smarter and said, we're considering not spinning centrifuges, we're considering a consortium outside the country, they could have delayed this further. Trump would be like, Dad, the window's still open. But instead they go, no, we're never going to stop. We're going to always enrich. And we put too much money into the centrifuge. We're never going to stop that. So right there, the president said 60 days. We really made no progress. Okay, let's do it. So let's say they say, wow, we had a come to Jesus moment, which is interesting for a Muslim nation. And they realize they could be over. And they say, all right, we'll have uranium enrichment outside the country. I don't believe it. They say, okay, release the sanctions. We'll probably do it. And guess where that money goes? It goes back to build up the proxies again, creating havoc, not just for Israel, with the entire region.
Right. Well, and if you look at, there's a ring of fire surrounding Israel. Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, you've got militants.
They've been brought down to size.
They have, but the ring of fire, make no mistake, still exists. And so that investment that Iran has made with the billions of dollars we've given them haven't gone just to the nuke program or even building ballistic missiles. It's been deeply invested in those proxies to keep that ring of fire. Why does the ring of fire matter? Because it puts Israel on a multi-front war where they could drain the resources and really the will of Israel. But, you know, when you talk about the fact that Iran never plays by the rules, you know, all the discussion now is about the Fordo plant, the nuclear plant under the mountain that could possibly only be taken out by the U.S. with bunker busters. That plant was secretly built in violation of UN sanctions in 2007. It wasn't until Intel about 2009, 2010 came out. They're like, sorry, we did that. And now that literally is the center of sort of where the argument is.
MEK. It was the outsider group, Iranian group, that a lot of Republicans and some Democrats thought was going to be the next government of Iran. And they look as their arch enemy. They say, by the way, these guys are lying to you. And there is more nuclear plants. They go, okay, you got me. Here's more from Ambassador Leiter, Cut 12.
We are going to deal with the nuclear program as best we can. We still have a few surprises up our sleeve. I think we've proven that over the past couple of days. We're determined to get this done. At this point, what we've requested from our ally, our greatest ally, the United States, is a defensive posture. They're helping protect our civilians through defensive missile systems. And that's our ask at this point. Whether or not they join in the battle to ensure a total dismantlement of Iran's nuclear program is a decision the administration will have to take.
I emphasize and circle surprises up our sleeve. And we've already been in awe from the pagers, followed by the walkie-talkies, to the Mossad setting up a drone plant inside Israel, to the taking out of the scientists, as well as the leadership in a ruse of a meeting. And now today we wake up to find out the Quds force has been bombed and four leaders have been killed, including the number one intelligence officer. So if you tell me you have a surprise, I'm beginning to believe
you.
Yeah,
I believe it. I mean, look, they've done things that nobody even dreamed of doing. And the fact, too, that in those initial strikes at the Isfahan plant, that's sort of where all the scientists, that's where the nuke nerds are. And I think there's a dozen or 14 top scientists have been taken out. And so, you know, you look at the whole picture of what they've done. But you know, when we hear that from the Israelis that Iran is very close to creating not only the nuclear warhead, but also a sophisticated ballistic missile, something that they haven't had before that could reach New York, Washington, Miami.
Right.
How do you possibly begin to take any other position other than we have to stop that? And I think that's where President Trump is coming from. He's looking for some way to try and slow the hostilities, to bring this to a ceasefire, to stop the bombs from dropping. But at the end of the day, make no mistake, he's got his eye on the threat posed to the U.S.
I want to get your take on the parade. I want to get your take also on some of the unrest with this so-called No Kings rally, series of rallies. And then also how this all plays into Russia and Ukraine, because Iran was supplying Russia with these drones. Does that stop now? Because they got their own issues. Also, Iran was supplying China with oil. And yes, does that stop now? That will affect our enemies.
We'll have to ask the Ayatollah Khamenei, but apparently he's gone missing. No one knows where he is.
Right. We know he could have been dead, but it seems like Trump saved him.
Yeah.
Back in a moment with Griff Jenkins. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and I got to get your take. You just got an assignment today, right, Griff, just now?
I just did. I'm going to be covering it later today. There is a rally in Times Square. The banner is Solidarity with Iran. Break the siege on Gaza. And it just
Do you believe
strikes,
this?
It just strikes me unbelievable.
Didn't you think that was a joke when someone wrote you? In New York City, we have to rally for the oppressive, terrorist-sponsoring nation of Iran.
So before, the same crowd was pro-Hamas, which presumably they still are. Now, they're pro-Ayatollah Khamenei, which is just unbelievable. You know, who knows where it goes, but there's a common link here, and that is it tells us it's really, you know, exposing that they just are anti-Semitic. Yeah.
Yep. All right, so you said there's a divide in the Republican Party, in the MAGA base. I asked Mike Pompeo about that and how it plays into it, because he evidently was not copacetic with some people in the MAGA base. That's why he's not Secretary of State again or something. Cut 16.
Well, first of all, I think President Trump's right. He does get to shape this in a way that no one else can. It is his leadership. But second, I actually think it's a pretty small part of the folks who supported Donald Trump in the last election that don't understand that it's in America's interest to see a nation that chants death to America and wants to kill not only our president, but me and others here in the United States. I think Americans fundamentally get that and see that this is a good thing. So there's a couple of loud voices. that claim to come from the right. I actually think they sound more like Tim Walz than Ronald Reagan. But make no mistake about it. I think most Americans appreciate that President Trump has kept Americans safe for an awfully long time. He's prevented our having to send large numbers of our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines into combat. We didn't do it in the first 4 years. I think he can deter the Iranians again. And when we get this right, we'll all be safer. There won't be any new wars, just as there weren't in the first Trump term. And I think not only will folks from the MAGA movement and from the Republican Party, but I think most Americans will appreciate the remarkable work that President Trump's done.
So that was pretty diplomatic, like a statesman, but he knows he's been the target. You know, why is Mike Waltz not there? I mean, people say, well, he's from like a neocon. He's not a neocon. He's just, he understands where American security should be. And Mike Pompeo, the same way, whenever you need to be, you know, when he was CIA director and secretary of state, maybe it wouldn't have been President Pompeo's policy, but he executed it.
Yeah. And, you know, here's the other thing. We know that there's roughly some 40,000 U.S. troops throughout the Middle East. We've got bases in Kuwait, in Bahrain, in the UAE, in Qatar.
Iraq.
In Iraq. We've even got some troops, a small number, I believe, still in Syria. And at the end of the day, you know, President Trump made it very clear over the weekend that if a hair on a single U.S. service member is harmed, it's going to be a game changer. And so you can't be against America's best interest and say that you're not going to do everything you can to not only protect the homeland and put America's best interest first, and then decide you're not going to stand up and take a swipe. By the way, if I was president of the United States and knew and witnessed active assassination attempts from the leader of another country, we're all human. I'd want to blow that country off the face of the map. Of course, Trump is not.
Maybe one of the reasons, Bill Clinton went after Saddam Hussein and punished him was because he had an assassination attempt on Bush 41. And he was the new president and he took a shot at, he made Saddam pay a price for that.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, the split in the MAGA base, I think, is going to be overshadowed greatly by where this sort of conflict goes, because what is happening right now, the tit for tat that we're seeing over the last 5 days between Israel and Iran cannot sustain. This can't stay this way. Maybe that's why Iran's trying to come to the table. But, you know, we saw with President Trump dealing with Kashmir, India, and Pakistan, like he's thinking out of the box. We've seen him come up with ideas that people weren't thinking about. It took traditional ideology and thinking and just threw it out the window and said, okay, here's where we're trying to get to. We'll see where we get.
All right, so let's talk about the parade real quick. You covered it. You watched it. You did post-game on it. Here are some people that watched it and had a totally different take. I was fully in support, better than I could have imagined. Trump's speech was just right on point. Cut 28 is Seth Moulton and Jason Crow, Democrats in the House, who both served in the military. Cut 28.
And watching this from a president who has occasionally praised and oftentimes denigrated the U.S. military, I'm just reminded by how out of touch this guy is.
That the army doesn't serve a politician, it serves the country. But President Trump obviously doesn't see it quite that way. He looks at the military as a function of his personal power.
The army didn't ask for this. This is not how they wanted to celebrate this event. Donald Trump asked for this.
You realize the army did ask for this and Joe Biden granted him permission to do it. Oh, it was going to be a lot smaller. When Trump saw the plan, he goes, no, we're going to do it bigger. And it's going to be a birthday party and we're going to make it worthy of the army. So he's wrong, Jason Crow, on that to begin with.
Yeah. And the army doesn't ask for it pretty much because they've never been given it, because we didn't appreciate
right.
it. It's been years since we had a parade. And by the way, you know, for those lawmakers, did they really watch it? Because if you watched it and you saw the faces of young children and the crowd, you know, if you didn't get goosebumps, you just aren't human. And because what struck me, and I was writing down words as I was watching it, Brian, patriotism, pride, service, gratitude. And you saw on the faces of the 6,000 plus soldiers that were a part of it, how much pride they had in being a part of it.
Right.
And then you saw, you know,
look at the other presidents that had parades. How do you say it? Washington, George Washington, that's how you say it, right? He had a parade. Thomas Jefferson had parades. Lincoln had a parade. Harry S. Truman, JFK had a parade, Inauguration Day, including significant military presence, including missiles, tanks, and hardware. Dwight Eisenhower, is that how you say it? Didn't he do some World War? I'm not sure. But let's just say he had a parade in 53 and 57, all right? And George H.W. Bush after the 91 Persian Gulf War win. Ronald Reagan had a parade in 81 and 85. What was the big deal? This was actually better probably than all those. It was more futuristic and nostalgic in the same
those
way.
Those guys did it because they knew Americans wanted to be proud of their country. And President Trump brought that back.
Do you still think Washington's overrated? Right, Griff? No, you
I love it. I love it. 3 decades and counting.
Thanks, Griff.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. And thanks so much for listening. Great of Griff to drop by. How unbelievable is it that he has got to go cover a pro-Iran rally in Times Square in New York City? So embarrassing to be in this city. I mean, to have this guy, Zohran Mamdani, who's a avowed socialist, anti-Semite, anti-Israel, anti-police candidate who's a close number two to Cuomo for the Democratic nomination, who wants to give away food, double your taxes, have supermarkets for the poor, that everyone gets free food, free buses, free subway. I mean, he has no clue how to do anything. Meanwhile, the president of the United States at the G7 summit, he's just gotten there. The number one story of, obviously, is the Israeli-Iran conflict. Let's bring in Dr. Kanta Ahmed. She's Senior Fellow of Independent Women's Forum, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Dr. Ahmed, welcome back. Your thoughts about what Israel's pulled off so far?
Just extraordinary. I mean, 72 hours, Israel has secured total dominance over the airspace from Western Iran to Tehran. That's an area of denial. Right now, Israel is bombing during the daytime, I am informed, taking out their national television. Last night, they took out the massive fuel storage capabilities. So now Iranians are lining for fuel with a limit of about 15 liters, a few gallons per family. And I think they are closing in. Obviously, the first few hours, they neutralized major uranium enrichment sites. And all of this done with extraordinary precision, targeting, and taking out Iran's capabilities of launching missiles, which Iran is still doing. I've been here several days. Each night we have multiple alarms. We have to go to the bomb shelter. Unfortunately, there have been 24 Israelis killed, 595 wounded, the vast majority lightly wounded. So it's taking a toll. And of the almost 400 ballistic missiles that Iran has launched, less than 10% have penetrated.
Which is pretty amazing. So they said they expect as high as 15%, according to the ambassador, but you have it even lower. So I'll tell you what, it does say everything about Iran. They are going for civilians. And what the Israelis are doing with high sophistication are going for the military. They're going for nuclear scientists.
Very important distinction, yeah. Brian. Thank you.
And that's just it. It's like, what's the target? So where the Wall Street Journal says that the foreign minister is approaching intermediaries and saying they're looking to get talks going again. Dr. Ahmed, I hope this doesn't sound bad. I have no interest, if I'm the U.S. or Israel, in talks. Are you kidding me? So we go back to letting them on their word not enrich, or thinking about not enriching and spinning centrifuges or might not spin them. As soon as they get some money, as soon as they rebuild the oil and gas programs, which I think Israel's doing a job on right now, they're going to start fueling Hezbollah and Hamas. And it's going to be back at square one again.
I couldn't agree more. And I think Israel is speaking loudly. This country, Iran, has had almost a decade of these types of negotiations. And we know, and I believe this is what lit the fuse, is that Iran was preparing to receive precursors via Hong Kong to replenish over 800 ballistic missiles. And so I think that is the reason why Prime Minister Netanyahu knew that they are approaching or at nuclear threshold. And we know from Brett Byers' conversation with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman that A nuclear Iran means a nuclear Saudi Arabia and the region. And let me just remind you, we just went through 10 days ago, the conflict with India and Pakistan. And you can see how the game changes when there are two nuclear players putting everything at stake. So, yes, I think Israel has spoken. There is no room for negotiation. And I do believe this is the end of the Islamist regime. That is going to be the end result.
I know when these oppressive societies happen, you really don't know what they're made of and how strong they are. We saw that with Saddam Hussein and others. But looking right now, I mean, they just killed four heads of the Quds force, the people, that the nine commanders that were blown up the first day. The Ayatollah could have been killed had Donald Trump told the prime minister not to do it. You wonder what is keeping this group up?
So some of it may be that they've drunk their own Kool-Aid and they believe that they are invincible. And I think Iran is really discovering its own capacity is more of a paper tiger. You mentioned it. They relied on their proxies, whether it's Hamas that has conducted an excoriating campaign, tormenting and torturing and sacrificing its own population, as well as devastating Israelis on October 7th and after that. And even more so Hezbollah. But right at the start, in the first 24 hours, the remnants of Hezbollah in Lebanon had said, hey, we're out of this. We are not defending Iran because they have been appropriately chastised and they're looking at their end days. So now you're finding an Iran that really hasn't been battle tested since the 1980s war between Iran and Iraq, which Iraq won. So I think that they are probably slow to realize this is the end. My guess is many of the Ayatollahs and the leading clerics will flee to the same place that Bashar Assad is. They'll get asylum. And now we have to see. I'm glad that you mentioned Iraq. My sources in Iraq are very worried about what will happen to Iran when this regime collapses. They are fearful that there could be some anarchy. There isn't a clear leading opposition in Iran. It's a vibrant democracy. And I also think that the United States, even though it's been providing intelligence and a lot of moral support and logistical support, the United States is an extraordinary deterrent. I was expecting Iran to also strike on U.S. assets in Erbil and U.S. special forces there, but nothing of that nature has occurred because Iran fears the United States.
Iraq, I'm not saying it would have been easy, and I know we made mistakes in Iraq. Saddam Hussein to be taken out, we can debate that. I think he had to be done. We can't just look in 2024 and 2025 and say, well, we shouldn't have done that. Well, put yourself back there. This was the menace of the Middle East. And yes, he was opposition to Iran. But when Saddam Hussein gone, Iran created so much unrest, killed so many soldiers directly and indirectly, and really funded the militias and the unruly behavior of post-Saddam Iraq. Things would have been a lot different had Iran not put their hands on the till in there, and much more than they were doing with Syria. And now they have huge influence in Iraq. We don't love that. So, and there's, the Iraqis have their own pride. Even the Shias don't love the Iranians and the Persians. So, but they had to because they had the power and the money. But now think about how things would change in Iraq if Iran had a different leadership.
I'm so glad you said that. And Brian, there's probably no one on air who has the kind of depth of foreign policy as you do at the moment, and given our almost 10 years of us talking about extremism, beginning with Charlie Hebdo, if you remember. Exactly. That's where I really learned about the menace of Iran in the region, is visiting Iraq and speaking to particularly our Kurdish friends. The way that Iran has subjugated Iraq, the way its militia are still operating freely, the Hashd al-Shaabi, who, interestingly, as Israel has launched these operations, my sources tell me, have left their posts. I'm waiting for them to give up their uniforms. They are absolutely terrified of U.S. consequences. So I believe Israel has actually redrawn the map of the Middle East already. This is why Syria is now entering into the international community. So this is why Assad has left. This is from Israeli actions. This is why Lebanon has a chance, because Hezbollah took on Israel, big mistake. Lebanon is now liberated. And I believe the same outcome could happen for Iraq and Iran. My hope is President Trump will see that his legacy truly could be helping dismantle the nuclear weapon capabilities of Iran and now gifting the world a flourishing Middle East because of the heavy lifting Israel has done.
Yes, there's two moves Iran has left, I think. Decide to attack U.S. forces and shut off the Strait of Hormuz. I can't see either one being a rational right next move, but this has never been a rational regime.
So you're correct. First of all, again, sources close to the Kurdish regional government tell me that there seems to be, even though it's a strategic possibility, there seem no signs of Iran retaliating on either Kurdish territory or federal Iraq territory. I know that we have the most important asset there in terms of the American consulate in the American consulate in Erbil, which is our biggest consulate. Yes, that's a nice target. About the Straits of Hormuz, that's pretty intelligent as well that you said. Yes, they might threaten that. And yes, their Khaybar Island is actually right there at the north end of the Persian Gulf. But Iran doesn't really have capability to strangle that Strait of Hormuz. That will be absolutely vigorously defended.
Yeah.
And any oil that they're exporting, which I believe Israel will kill their oil export capability, the market has already absorbed that. So I think we are not going to see them strangle the oil routes to have any significant effect. I think this is the end game for Iran, and they are under a lot of pressure. That pressure will intensify tonight.
Eli Lake was on with us a short time ago and said, you know, when it comes to regime change, America doesn't want any part of it, and we shouldn't. But listen to what he said we should worry about, perhaps.
Let's just say the Israelis have capabilities inside of Iran to support demonstrations, and to support the opposition. The opposition in Iran is not organized. There isn't really a key leader. You could argue maybe the son of the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, is somebody who people have rallied around. He is more popular in Iran than I think most people would want to realize. But there is a real opportunity here. And I think the strategic opportunity is that, yes, I understand the argument. After, you know, the government falls in Afghanistan, the Taliban come in. They're the devil we don't know, maybe worse than the devil we know. But this is a very bad devil, the Iranian regime. And the Iranians have a history of a constitutional system. They have a history of a democracy in some ways in the 20th century. It's not crazy to think that there can be something better. And I think that, you know, there is a role for America to play, not to rebuild, not to nation build. It's not for the United States at this point. We don't do that. But I think there is a role to play leading the world to try to bring support for something of a democratic transition.
So it's a pretty bad devil, is what I want. This current one is a pretty bad devil.
So I think Eli has hit it right on the head. However, I would emphasize the Iranian people, 90 million people, they are amongst the most educated in the region. Remember, they are Persians. They have a civilization 5,000 years. They have had a diverse ethnic and a diverse religious background. Their women are some of the most educated in the region. They have tremendous passion of their nation. I think given this opportunity, though I do not believe that Israel conducted these operations for regime change, this is about the survival of the state of Israel and the prevention of a genocidal assault that the Iranian leaders have still been announcing since this conflict. But I do agree, if we can facilitate the Iranians for taking the reins, I think that would be very good for humanity.
Dr. Ahmed, thanks so much. Stay safe in Israel.
Brian, it's great to see you again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, historic times, and you're getting a firsthand view. All right, Brian Kilmeade Show, we'll be back in just a moment. The President of the United States at the G7 just made remarks. It's not a good time, he said, to have Putin come into the G7, make it a G8, but he said they never should have been kicked out by Barack Obama earlier. So more statements. They should not be brokering peace in Iran. I can tell you that for sure. I just have no credibility. Plus, with Israel, you know what Israel found with Hezbollah when they started going through those tunnels? Russian weapons. Same thing with Hamas. So Russia's all over this, and they're not a friend of Israel's. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Deal is achievable within days, within weeks. Is there that kind of runway?
Yeah, it's achievable. Both parties have to agree. Yeah, sure. Have you seen it? Have you heard any signals or seen any messages from intermediaries that Iran wishes to de-escalate the conflict?
Yeah.
What have you heard? What have you heard from the Iranians?
They'd like to talk, but they should have done that before. I had 60 days, and they had 60 days, and on the 61st day, I said, we don't have a deal. They have to make a deal, and it's painful for both parties, but I'd say Iran is not winning this war, and they should talk, and they should talk immediately before it's too late.
And what would you say, in your opinion, what would it take for the U.S. to get involved in this conflict militarily?
I don't want to talk about that.
And you mentioned Putin. Do you think that he should have a seat at the G7 today, that it should be the G8?
I'm not saying he should at this point, because too much water's gone over the dam, maybe. But it was a big mistake. Obama didn't want him, and the head of your country, the proud head of your country, didn't want him. This was a big mistake. You wouldn't have that war. You know, you have your enemy at the table. Even I don't even consider him. He wasn't really an enemy at that time. There was no concept. If I were president, this war would have never happened. But likewise, if he were a member of the what was called the G8 at that time, it was always the G8, you wouldn't have a war right now.
Well, he was, as Jennifer Griffin reminds everybody, Russia was removed from the G8 in 2014 following the annexation of Crimea from Ukraine. The action was deemed a violation of international law and the principles upon the G8, now G7, is founded. The move was a response to Russia's aggression. What Trump would have done is said, wait, Trump is much more practical. He said, yeah, I know that. But if they kick us out, what's better for world peace? If we kick them out and we stop talking to them, or if we leave them in and we try to have some type of influence on them? Trump is under the mind that I'd want to have influence on him. So that's his approach to foreign policy. I know he has a much different approach. You're not going to find any political science classes or any think tanks. It's Donald Trump's instincts. But that's the way we felt. I was glad that he said I would not bring him in right now. How could you possibly bring him in now? I mean, you got the whole world united against him in Europe for what he did. He's killing innocent people on a regular basis, kidnapping children, brutalizing prisoners. The ones he does not kill, he hands back a shell of what they were. And they release. Then he puts his prisoners into his military and tell them just run straight ahead. So I mean, he's a villainous character. I don't see any virtue in him. President does. Or the president goes, listen, I got to deal with him. I didn't pick him. And to deal with him, the best is to not alienate him. So he's able to look past that. This guy does deals every day of the week since he was probably 18. He is 79 years old now. I'm not in his class. I don't think many people are. He could put personal things behind him. I give you an example. Do you know that two people over the weekend came out and said, I spoke to President Trump personally, and here's what he said. They were Dana Bash and Rachel Scott. These are two reporters who the president has clashed with hard. And ripped hard. And these guys, I watched a lot of their work. They do not only don't give me the benefit of the doubt, not putting down, they just don't like him. And when Rachel Scott went in, aggressively went after him at that African-American event for journalists, black journalists, during the campaign, she was like loaded for bear. And he still gets a call from Rachel Scott, put her through. Here's the deal. This is what I'm thinking on X, Y, and Z. And Dana Bash. A lot of people would be like, no, never deal with that reporter again. Done with them. But Trump is like, okay, I'll win you over, or I'll let you do your job. I'll give you the right story, and you could choose not to report it. But instead, they go on ABC this week with George Stephanopoulos, which never has him on. Martha Raddatz was on. And he said, here's what the president just told me. They look great. At one point, when the lights go off and they go home, they say to themselves, I might disagree with him, but he's showing me the respect that Joe Biden never did for 4 years. And I never criticized Joe Biden, even though he was mentally vacant. Brian Kilmeade Show. I cannot wait to see you in Dayton, Ohio this Saturday. BrianKilmeade.com. History, Liberty, and Laughs.
As America prepares for its 249th birthday on July 4th, Fox News Podcasts celebrates great Americans, highlighting well-known and everyday folks who've made their mark on the country in their own special way. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.